Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Wow, the crowds. Please, ladies and gentlemen, wait your turn. Copies of Greed and Fear really, really will still be available, so just don't push. I know you've seen the frenzy, and you're thinking, will there be a copy for me? Well, they're digital. There'll be a copy. Anyway, I'm back in the Le Show Dome, the legacy Le Show, the heritage Le Show Dome. A few changes, but, you know, life has changed. Celebrating the one-month anniversary of I Am. I noticed, you know, that reminds me. Aside from the stupidity, the thing that nags at me most now about watching cable news is the trend towards removing the personal pronoun. Want to get you to this next story. Who want to? Who is that want to? I'm left there wondering while the story rolls on. Want to get you up to date right now? No, you... Let's get you up to date. We're going to get you up to date. Want to? Want to? Do it. And who? Who want to? Anyway, celebrating the one-month anniversary of the editing of The Big Uneasy coming this August. Yes, I'm excited. Herbie's excited. Ladies and gentlemen, the new Iraq. Joe Lieberman was on one of the Sunday Yak shows saying that I know that we're seeing a lot of these violence today, but most of the news about Iraq is good news. And when Joe Lieberman says it's good news, for some reason, I get depressed. It's just the delivery, I think. Good news. You don't want to hear that. Hey, good news, everybody. Anyway, here's the good news. Here's some of the good news. In a sign of hardening sectarian division, says the Washington Post, the secular, largely Sunni-backed bloc that won the most seats in Iraq's recent parliamentary elections says its victorious candidates are being subjected to a campaign of detention and intimidation by the Maliki government. His coalition lost by two seats to Alawi's bloc. The prime minister has been contesting the results, saying they're fraudulent. How could that be? You got to be kidding. Fraudulent in an Iraqi election? His bloc, Maliki's, has appealed the outcome in Iraq's courts. Never heard of that before. And now, according to Alawi, Maliki is using state security forces in a bid to gain enough seats to emerge the winner. This week, at least two winning Iraqiya, that's the opposition candidates in the capital, were told they're wanted. Two others are on the run. Sunni Arabs see the win by Alawi, a secular person, as their own. Many Iraqis and analysts worry that Sunnis will feel cheated if Alawi loses his lead before the new parliament is certified, a development that could spark retaliatory violence. The decision of Iraq's Justice and Accountability Committee to bar six winning candidates of the Iraqiya coalition from sitting in parliament has reignited the debate, according to Al Jazeera, about that body's involvement in the country's politics. The committee, the Justice and Accountability Committee, is its job is to prevent former members of the Ba'ath Party from returning to public life. It said earlier this week six candidates should never have been allowed to run for election. It's now going to have them barred from parliament. Who's the senior official of that committee? Come on, you know the answer to that. Ahmed Chalabi. You never get rid of Chalabi. It's like grime. It's like pesky odors around the house. He and his colleague on the committee, Ali Alami, were candidates for a bloc which came in third in the election. Some Iraqi politicians charge that the Justice and Accountability Committee is acting as both judge and jury. The spokesman for Alawi's coalition says the committee is using its influence to bar Chalabi's political rivals. You know, you got to give the guy credit. He's a survivor, baby. He's a survivor. And, ladies and gentlemen, news of the digital wonderland. The Communications Committee of the British Parliament has called into question the United Kingdom's ability to achieve its stated aim of switching almost all radio in Great Britain to digital. Because the TV thing is working so well. by 2015. Does that means in radio, the sound will be out of sync. The existing analog radio signal in the UK is scheduled to be switched off completely just 5 years from now, yet last year it still accounted for two-thirds of all radio listening in Great Britain. 94% of British listeners are satisfied with the radio they currently have. All right, then. We must change it. And change starts with you. No, it starts with C, actually. Hello, welcome to the show.
When you're alone, who cares for starlit skies? When you're alone, the magic moonlight dies. At break of dawn, there is no sunrise. When your lover has gone, what lonely hours the evening shadows bring. What lonely hours with memories lingering, like faded flowers. Life can't mean anything when your lover has gone.
Edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show, based on Push by Sapphire. I know, it's Hollywood. We all have to say that now. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Tales of Airport Security. Based on a novel by Sapphire. Based on Fly by Sapphire. I'm not sure. Dear Harry, writes Neil, for the trip home, my family and I just spent a lovely week in New Orleans. Congratulations. For the trip home, we get to New Orleans International Airport early. The security line was empty. I know the feeling. I still use film for some of my snapshots, writes Neil. The film was labeled 400 speed, but I typically push it, based on Push, to 1600 to shoot in very low light, by Sapphire. TSA's webpage says you can request hand inspection for any film and recommends hand inspection for pushed film. I had my half dozen rolls of film ready to go in a plastic bag. I pulled out the bag. Based on Pull by Sapphire. I'm sorry, I'm getting
I'm getting into a thing now. I pulled out the bag, put it in one of the small trays, and requested hand inspection. The man at the x-ray machine said that film up to 400 speed could be x-rayed safely. I said that some of this film was shot at higher speed and repeated my request for a hand inspection. The man behind the x-ray machine called out to a woman sitting at a desk doing nothing apparent that there was, quote, one for her. She came over, looked at the film, and said that film up to 400 speed could be x-rayed safely. I said that some of this film was shot at a higher speed. She grudgingly took the film over to another area where she opened each container up, swabbed the film can, and ran each swab through a machine. She then plopped down the tray with the opened containers in front of me and went back off to her desk, complaining loudly about having to do extra work inspecting 400-speed film. Judging from what I saw, her version of extra work is what many people would call work. Here's the punchline, writes Neil. We had a carry-on bag that we'd originally planned to check. It contained several bottles of liquid over the verboten 3-ounce limit, including a very large bottle of contact lens solution. This went through the checkpoint unnoticed. I feel very secure. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Long the world's largest producer of opium, Afghanistan has now become the top supplier of cannabis, with large-scale cultivation in half its provinces, according to the UN. See, that's what the UN is good for. Tells us where the pot's being grown. Between 10,000 and 24,000 hectares of cannabis are grown every year in Afghanistan, with major cultivation in 17 out of 34 provinces. We're not fighting for oil, we're fighting for pot. I get it. Afghanistan's robust crop yields, it's not using more land, but it's more efficient, make it the world's largest producer. Estimated at 1,500 to 3,500 tons a year. That's a pretty big range, UN. Can you get a little more specific in your next report, please? The report shows that Afghanistan's drug problem is even more complex than just the opium trade, says the head of the United Nations Drug Agency. They got a drug agency, too. It's good. It's good business, the drug agency business. Reducing Afghanistan's cannabis supply should be dealt with more seriously as part of the national drug control strategy. Good point, because that's working so well. For years, Afghanistan has been the world's largest producer of opium. The opium trade is said to fuel the insurgency in Afghanistan, with the Taliban siphoning off millions of dollars from the trade by imposing taxes on farmers and smugglers in return for safe passage. As with opium, most cannabis cultivation takes place in the south of the country, where the insurgency is the strongest, according to the UN. One of the reasons cannabis is so widely grown, according to the UN, is because of its low labor costs and high returns. It's the magic of the marketplace, babe. Look into it. The entire process is a non-expensive, fast industrial process, which is indeed somewhat worrying, head of the UN drug agency in Afghanistan told reporters. We already have enough problems with the opium, so we don't want to see the cannabis taking over, he said. But relax, babe. Afghanistan still grows far more opium than cannabis. It needs a lot of water to grow, which is in short supply in Afghanistan, and it has a very short shelf life, says the head of the UN drug agency in Afghanistan. You can walk around with opium for 10 to 15 years, and perhaps, like the wine, it gets better with the time. Just the head of the UN drug agency in Afghanistan, saying opium is like wine, it gets better with time. But he's making a point. Please, for cannabis, you need to process it really immediately. All right, then. He seems to know what he's talking about the opium, though. And, in case you haven't heard this, every 2 weeks, General Stanley McChrystal, our head of the thing over in Afghanistan, you know, the thing that's so unlike everybody else's thing that they've ever done historically in Afghanistan, because we're the good guys. This thing, McChrystal, the head of this thing, want to get you back to Stanley McChrystal. He participates in a virtual town hall in which soldiers in Afghanistan submit questions by chat that he answers over streaming audio. Oh, babe. Get me that URL, please. But anyway, this was first reported by the New York Times last week, but here are his comments from, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and this is now the full transcript. Question from a soldier. On escalation of force, have you considered engaging the local community on the issue? General McChrystal, that's a great point. I don't know if we have, but we certainly ought to be doing that. We have so many escalation of force issues, and someone gets hurt in the process, and we say they didn't respond like they were supposed to. Well, they may not have known how they were supposed to respond, so they approached a checkpoint or whatever. They may have taken actions that seemed appropriate to them, and when a warning shot was fired, they may have panicked. I think this is a great thing to do, to engage people and tell them the kind of behavior on their part that would lower the chance they would run into problems. I do, continued General McChrystal, want to say something that everyone understands. We really ask a lot of our young service people out on the checkpoints because there's danger. They're asked to make very rapid decisions in often very unclear situations. However, to my knowledge, quoth General McChrystal, in the 9+ months I've been here, not a single case where we've engaged in an escalation of force incident and hurt someone has it turned out that the vehicle had a suicide bomb or weapons in it, and in many cases, had families in it. That doesn't mean I'm criticizing the people who are executing. I'm just giving you perspective. We've shot an amazing number of people and killed a number, and to my knowledge, none has proven to have been a real threat to the force. Unquote, General McChrystal. The sound you're hearing, ladies and gentlemen, is the sound of hearts and minds being won. And meanwhile, in neighboring Pakistan, you know, right next door. By the way, speaking of the neighborhood, want to interrupt myself here for a moment, based on Interrupt by Push, Joe Lieberman also, I know, what am I doing watching Joe Lieberman? But he also mentioned on this Sunday Morning Yak show that Iran is a very expansionist power. Iran is an expansionist power. That's the premise for the whole, or part of the deal, I guess. Check a map, Joe. Iran is neighbored. Uh-oh, I just made a verb. Iran is neighbored by Iraq and Afghanistan, among other nations. Russia's there, too. But so who's the country that's got troops on two of Iran's borders, Joe? Just asking. Just because, you know, expansion is a sometime thing. But meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, over in Pakistan, which is also in the neighborhood, you'll be glad to know that a Pakistani court this week eased some travel restrictions on A.Q. Khan, the chief proliferator of nuclear weapons and techniques in the modern world. You know, gave stuff to North Korea, Libya, Iran. He's cool. Iran's bad. He's cool. They eased some travel restrictions. The court maintained a prohibition, however, you'll be glad to know, on any journalistic interviews with him about his past nuclear activities. So don't ask. Don't forget about it. What? You want to know what? Mm-mm. Khan is revered in Pakistan as the father of Pakistan's nuclear weapon, you see. He had been under house arrest in 2004. You may recall, he later offered an apology to the nation over his nuclear proliferation activities. Western intelligence officials have said Khan created that black market that sold nuclear technology to other countries as well as North Korea, Iran, and Libya. He was declared a free man by a court in February 2009. The United States and the country's army chief are having meetings to improve, to try to improve the relationship between Pakistan and the United States. Pakistan, you see, wants a civilian nuclear deal with the United States, same as we have with India. Came to that deal under the Bush administration, you may recall. But there's continued apprehension among officials in Washington over Khan's proliferation record. Never too late, babe. Apprehension now He did it. It's done. Gone. Boop. Bam. The safety of the nuclear arsenal of Pakistan is also an underlying concern in the United States. The court decision on Khan was announced after the government and Khan had reached an agreement that allowed him limited freedom. He will be able to travel within the country without prior approval from the authorities, but will still have to advise of his movements in advance. He will tell the government at least 30 minutes before he leaves his home for moving within the city. He'll have to tell the government at least one day before he schedules a move outside Islamabad. But he will, under the agreement, issue no statement or interact with any media on the issue of nuclear or proliferation, or nuclear proliferation, for that matter. His apology in 2004, by the way, was tearful, just in case you were wondering. Not cheerful. Tearful. A.Q. Khan, ladies and gentlemen, free at last. Great God Almighty, he's free at last. And now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general. Oh, yeah.
News of the inspectors general. Because they kind of ferreted out. In a report released this week, the Office of the Inspector General at the Justice Department expressed serious concerns. You like this. I like this. It's interesting just in the context of the frenzy over the iPad. The Inspector General of the Department of Justice expressed serious concerns about the progress of the FBI's project to overhaul its computer system. It reported the project would take at least 9 months longer and cost $26 million more than originally planned. Last month, the FBI ordered some work be temporarily halted on the project because of problems. They were minor, said the FBI. The project is now projected to cost $451.5 billion and take until 2011. The FBI's computer system has long been considered out of date. The effort to overhaul it has failed once before with a different contractor wasting more than $100 million. There's a kid down the street who could do it. That kid with the teeth? The FBI wants a new system to create a way to process, store, and manage its investigative records. Yeah, I don't know how you'd do that. Gee, you'd have to take the thing and then move it over to the other thing. In a paper-driven culture, the agency's computers were so inadequate that many agents until several years ago could not send or receive email messages and had difficulty getting case histories and linking to other databases. In the aftermath of 9/11, agents in Florida had to send photographs of the hijackers by mail, overnight mail, to Washington because they could not send email attachments.
Well, that would be, you'd have to see, control... You'd have to hit control. You'd have to left click, right. You'd have to both left and right click simultaneously.
More than a year after the creation of the Home Affordable Modification Program, we know it as HAMP. Disappointing results have raised questions about the effectiveness of the program, according to the Special Inspector General for the TARP program. That's right, HAMP is under TARP. Isn't that where you put it? The report is first of several which will be issued about on the subject. The HAMP program modifies home mortgages. First, program rules had not been fully developed before the program started. Treasury Department has had to revise those guidelines repeatedly, causing confusion and delay. Not time delay, however. The department's decision to allow servicers to start modifications before receiving supporting documentation created a large backlog of trial modifications. Many of those will never become permanent. Third, Treasury has not adequately promoted the program. The Special Inspector General called the absence of televised public service announcements inexplicable. Well, they were busy with the census. The HAMP program was designed to assist borrowers who were delinquent in mortgage payments to obtain modifications to those loans. The measuring the modif- anyway, you know, it's not going well. But there's more. State and local police officers who enforce federal immigration laws are not adequately screened, trained, or supervised, and the civil rights of the immigrants they deal with are not consistently protected. That's from the Inspector General of Homeland Security Department. A sweeping review of a program run by Immigration and Customs. The program is described as haphazardly administered. This is training state and local police officers who do immigration policing. Haphazardly administered training, local agencies detaining and prosecuting immigrants with little oversight from federal agents, and significant inconsistencies from place to place. There's no assurance the program is achieving its goals. Top officials at Immigration say the program's priority is to deport immigrants with serious criminal records, but the Inspector General found the program lacked measures to determine whether immigrants detained by local officers were serious offenders. Let's see, that would be, you'd have to use control. That would be a left click. Or without those measures, the report says, Immigration and Customs cannot be assured that resources are being appropriately targeted toward immigrants who pose the greatest risk to public safety. You're wondering, perhaps, what's up with Kellogg Brown and Root lately? Military contractor, formerly a subsidiary of Halliburton. They are characterized as extraordinarily arrogant this week by the head of the Commission on Wartime Contracting. The company sent a letter in January this year asking the military to, quote, stand down, unquote, and refrain from using Kellogg Brown Root's performance in attempting to contain costs as part of their calculations for their award fees. That is to say, whether or not we succeeded in reducing costs, pay us the reward money anyway. The chairman of the Wartime Contracting Commission, former Connecticut Congressman Chris Shays, calls it stunning that a company would ask the government to stand down. In an example of waste, the Department of Defense Inspector General calculated that of $5 million charged for tactical maintenance work at a base in Balad, Iraq, $4.6 million, or 92%, was wasted by Kellogg Brown and Root. KBR says it reported this to the government. The Army did not ask the company to correct it. Commissioners criticized the Army for failing to act despite clear evidence that millions in taxpayer dollars are being wasted. We're paying for services that aren't needed, conceded Lieutenant General James Pillsbury. Well, he's the doughboy. He would know. Commissioner Clark Kent Irvin said the case in Balad was not an isolated incident. He pointed to a November audit from last year that found on average across all sites in Iraq, the average contract labor utilization rate was less than 11%. What that means is that 89% of Kellogg Brown Root's labor was sitting idle between January and July of last year. And there's more. A whistleblower's accusations that the Federal Aviation Administration helped American Airlines avoid grounding aircraft were partially confirmed by the Department of Transportation's Office of Inspector General. The FAA, when alerted that American's planes were not in compliance, took the unusual step of directing a second outside opinion be obtained. Getting that second opinion took 2 days, which allowed Fort Worth-based American to make changes that ultimately kept planes in compliance with the rule and in the air. Regional FAA office also curiously ordered inspections of Americans' maintenance facilities to stop and crews to leave the hangars. Interesting. For 6 months in 2007, FAA managers at Detroit Airport allowed a pattern of aircraft landings and departures that violated safety rules and potentially put passengers at risk, even as air traffic controllers warned of the danger. That's from the Department of Transportation's Inspector General, responding to whistleblower allegations made by an air traffic controller, Vincent Sargent. The Office of Special Counsel, you've heard of that, talked about it on this program before, regarding the whistleblower inside the Army Corps of Engineers. The Office of Special Counsel sent the findings to Congress and the White House last month, noting that the procedures for segregating jet and propeller aircraft departures were unsafe. Those have changed. Speaking of the Army Corps of Engineers, the Corps unit with major construction projects in Afghanistan has set new standards for contracts, after the Defense Department's Inspector General said more than $20 million in performance award fees could not be justified. They granted performance awards totaling about $20 million for construction tasks in Iraq and Afghanistan. The IG says the awards were granted without sufficient support, justification, or assurance that contractors were paid award fees commensurate with their level of performance. In one case, A single field evaluation from an unknown source was used to support the award fee determination. In another case, an evaluation board did not explain what a contractor did to receive a high rating. Boy, if school had been like that, we'd all be geniuses. And finally, also about the Corps, a U.S. Government Accountability Office report made public this week says the Army Corps is not providing a timely picture of the economic value of dredging a 100-mile stretch of the Delaware River north of Camden, New Jersey. Environmentalists who've been joined by the governor in opposing the $400 million dredging project were quick to point out the report's findings. The GAO found the economic evaluations done by the Corps of Engineers are insufficient. They don't take into account the change in economic conditions, including the closing of refineries, the lessening of steel imports, and other market conditions within the region that make the deepening less viable. The report says there needs to be better guidance for public notice and environmental documents. There's still a lot of opposition to the deepening, and it may or may not go forward because of legal challenges by the states. News of the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, it's cheerful stuff, and it's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Driving on the lawn, sleeping on the roof, drinking all the alcohol. All the kids from school will be naked in the pool while our parents are on Fire Island, cranking up the tunes till the windows break, feeding chocolate to the dog, jumping on the couch till the feathers all come out while our parents are on Fire Island. We don't need no babysitter. We don't need no father or mother. We're old enough by now. Don't worry about a thing. Don't you remember last December when you went to Steamboat Springs?
Fans, it's a very special season of Dodger baseball, and here's just one reason why. This Friday night, and every Friday home game throughout the 2010 season, is Bad Divorce Night at Dodger Stadium. That's right, the first 10,000 fans who show up with their soon-to-be exes get a one-of-a-kind gift, Battling Bobbleheads. Husband and wife owners of a lucrative baseball franchise, and each time their heads bobble, they headbutt each other. But that's not all, because your Los Angeles Dodgers more than ever don't really belong to you. Bad divorce nights mean, for the first time, you can bid on your favorite Dodger player. From Manny Ramirez to Hong Chi-Koob, And this isn't fantasy baseball we're talking about. Because bad divorces cost money, you can actually bid for the rights to members of the Dodger roster. If your credit is good, your favorite player can be yours to keep or trade, just like the pros do. And if, unlike certain members of the Dodger family, you choose to stick around past the fourth inning, you'll get a free gift certificate, good for 7 hours of deposition and or litigation from one of Southern California's premier divorce law partnerships, the firm of Hazard & Nutt. All this plus what remains of Dodger baseball and the best ballpark sushi this side of Yokohama. So come on out, this or any Friday night all season long. Get your husband, wife, head-butting bobbleheads, hours of free divorce lawyer service, and a chance to own your own Dodger player. And help keep the Dodgers not just exciting, but solvent, too. Bad divorce night. We'll see you at the ballpark.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
Sorry.
Yeah, everybody's sorry this week. The accidental killing of 6 Afghan soldiers by German allies marked an unfortunate conclusion to a week of strained relations between the Afghan government and the West. After a bomb attack and an hours-long gunfight in which 3 German soldiers were killed Friday afternoon in Kunduz, you know where Kunduz is, up north, you know? German troops opened fire on 2 vehicles of Afghan soldiers, mistaking the responding troops for insurgents. The governor of Kunduz described the killings as a tragic misunderstanding for which the German commander had apologized. Other Afghan officials expressed outrage. Only saying we're sorry is not working. It's not enough, says Mabubula Mabob. Say it with me now. Mabubula Mabob. I know, names are funny. Everybody's name is funny. Dateline Belgrade, the European Union praised Serbia this week for acknowledging its troubled past. That's after the parliament in Belgrade apologized over the 1995 killing of thousands of Bosnian Muslims in Srebrenica. This is an important step for the country in facing the recent past, a process which is difficult but essential for Serbian society to go through, says the foreign policy chief of the European Union. The Serbian resolution expressed sympathy to the victims and apologized for not doing enough to prevent the massacre, but it stopped short of calling the killings genocide. Genocide's an ugly word. Deadline Amsterdam, a retired U.S. general has apologized. You probably remember these comments. Comments he made earlier this month linking the defeat of Dutch troops by Serbian forces at Srebrenica to the presence of openly gay soldiers in the Dutch military. Former NATO Supreme Allied Commander John Sheehan had told a congressional hearing European armies have been weakened by attempts to socialize them, including allowing gay soldiers to serve, citing the example of Srebrenica. He said in the hearing he'd been told by a Dutch military commander that the Dutch felt the presence of gay soldiers was one of the reasons the peacekeepers were so easily defeated. But in a letter this week to that commander, retired General Henk Vandenbremmen, Sheehan acknowledged that Vandenbremmen had said no such thing. I am sorry that my recent public recollection of those discussions of 15 years ago inaccurately reflected your thinking on some specific social issues in the military. To be clear, Sheehan says in the letter, the failure on the ground in Srebrenica was in no way the fault of the individual soldiers. Deadline Miami. Miami Heat forward Dornrell Wright says he's embarrassed that explicit photos of himself have been posted on the internet. How could that happen? The photos were taken in a private video chat about a year ago is how, and then they appeared on websites and several Twitter accounts. Through the team, Wright issued an apology saying the matter is something I truly regret. The team had no comment on the incident. It's the latest issue for Wright. He was arrested earlier this month on charges of DUI with a suspended license. The Heat suspended him after that arrest for 2 games. Wright is averaging 6.4 points, so he'll be missed. Keith Olbermann joked Tuesday night about a video that was making the rounds of Houston news anchor Melanie Lawson falling out of her chair. Subsequently, Olbermann apologized for that. Melanie Lawson has multiple sclerosis, has used a cane for many years, and she still laughed at herself when that happened, said Olbermann. So my apologies to you and to her for not having known that first. Can we please flag on the Wire or something, any anchors who have multiple sclerosis, so we don't make that mistake again, people. Please, thank you. The Catholic League has accepted NBC's apology for a headline on its website which said Pope Benedict XVI molested children. According to the Catholic League, this article, in fact, which had the headline, Pope describes touching boys, I went too far. The article said nothing about the Pope, but discussed a homosexual German priest who had sexual relations with males in the 1980s. Really? That ever happened? NBC apologized for the mistake. Hundreds of Bay Area Muslims cheered San Francisco Police Chief George Gascon as he publicly apologized this week for comments he made a week earlier referring to the susceptibility of the Hall of Justice to a terrorist attack by local Middle Eastern residents. Gascon spoke for about 5 minutes after a Muslim prayer service held in a hotel conference room. It's a week-long string of mea culpas offered by Gascon to the communities in the Bay Area. I'm sorry that I've offended you, that I've offended the Afghan community and other Middle Eastern communities. It doesn't matter where we come from, he said, who we pray to. Responsibility for our safety is a joint effort. Doesn't make any difference who we pray to? Really? Yemeni Consul General Mansour Ismail formally accepted Gascon's apology to even louder cheers. The chief hoped his apology would be well-received, but he wasn't sure what to expect. We had hoped for the best, said a spokesperson of the police department, but this was better than we hoped for. Those in attendance pulled out cell phones to take pictures of the chief and record his speech. How would you do that? Wouldn't you need an iPad? Deadline Cleveland. Cleveland Browns nose tackle. I know, I'm not a big football fan. So that phrase just... I just have to linger over it for a moment. Cleveland Browns nose tackle Sean Rogers apologized to his fans and his team this week, saying he didn't intend to carry a loaded gun in his luggage as he tried to pass through airport security. A prosecutor filed a fourth-degree felony charge alleging Rogers carried a .45-caliber Kimber semi-automatic with 8 rounds in his carry-on luggage at Cleveland's airport. The gun's hammer was cocked in safe mode. That's good. Rogers told reporters he didn't mean to take the gun into the airport and was sorry. He apologized to his family and fans and to the Browns. By no means did I intend or willingly and knowingly take a firearm into the airport. That's not something I would do. He told officers he'd forgotten the gun was in his bag and he carried it for personal safety during travel. He does have a license to carry a concealed weapon. I'm truly remorseful, he said, which of course is better than falsely remorseful any time. This is an apology from the New York Times, ladies and gentlemen. In 1994, Philip Bowring, a contributor to the International Herald Tribune's op-ed page, agreed as part of an undertaking with the leaders of the government of Singapore that he would not say or imply that Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong had attained his position through nepotism practiced by his father, the former Prime Minister Lee Kuan Yew. In a February 15th article this year, Mr. Bowring nonetheless included these two men in a list of Asian political dynasties, which may have been understood by readers to infer that the younger Mr. Lee did not achieve his position through merit. We wish to state clearly that this inference was not intended. We apologize to Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong, Minister Mentor Lee Kuan Yew, and former Prime Minister Goh Chok Tong for any distress or embarrassment caused by any breach of the undertaking and the article. I sure hope that's chocolate because you're eating a lot of it. Chloe Sevigny has apologized for her recent comments in which she called the fourth season of the HBO series Big Love awful. I feel pretty terrible. Sevigny is in the cast, by the way. I feel like what I said was taken out of context and the reporter I was speaking to was provoking me. I was at Austin, Texas for the South by Southwest Festival and really exhausted and doing a press junket and I wasn't thinking about what I was saying. And about the yelling from the producer when you came back? I'm just guessing. No, nothing like that's ever happened to me. Dateline Fort Wayne, Indiana, the executive director of Black Pine Animal Park apologized this week for an April Fool's prank that topped an email from the park. Lori Gagan issued a written statement saying the email sent out with strange maulings at the park in the subject line featuring a photo of stuffed animal parts was meant to be a joke, not meant to upset or annoy or frustrate anyone. It said, happy, have a wonderful April Fool's Day, in blue at the bottom. But she apologized anyway. Humor by amateurs, ladies and gentlemen, always a good idea. The Indianapolis Star, speaking of newspaper apologies, apologized to Duke University after some of Friday's editions included an illustration of Duke basketball coach Mike Krzyzewski with horns and a target drawn in his head. The paper pulled the illustration, says the senior editor of sports, when we realized it didn't meet our standards. It was an illustration that should have come together earlier than it did. The sports editor apologized Friday morning to Duke officials. Well, they're called the Blue Devils. The hell? Now, of course, to the obvious ones. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams, has been forced into a humiliating apology after claiming the Roman Catholic Church in Ireland had lost all credibility over the child abuse scandal. Following a torrent of criticism, Dr. Williams admitted his deep sorrow and regret over his earlier comments in a telephone conversation with the Catholic Archbishop of Dublin. Archbishop Williams affirmed that nothing could have been farther from his intention than to offend or criticize the Irish Church. Well, just said they lost all credibility, that's all. Milwaukee's archbishop admits mistakes were made in the handling of an abusive priest years ago. Father Murphy, he of the 200 deaf boys. Not in Rome, but in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee. Documents released show that Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger decided not to remove Father Murphy, even after he admitted molesting boys at a deaf school. But Milwaukee Archbishop Jerome Listecki said people can look a lot closer. As a bishop, a priest, and as a man of faith, I apologize to anyone who has been a victim of clergy sexual abuse. This crime, this sin, this horror should never occur, especially by a priest, Listecki said. He apologized for the horrible crimes and defended the Pope. And first Pope Benedict's personal preacher apologized. Well, Pope Benedict's personal preacher apologized to Jews for comparing the barrage of attacks against the church and the Pope over a number of huge sexual abuse scandals to collective violence against Jews throughout history. Statements came on Good Friday. Said Father Ramiro Cantalamessa, if, and it was not my intention to do so, I hurt the sensitivities of Jews and victims of pedophilia, I'm truly sorry, and I ask for forgiveness. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Take it now. My heart is carrying such a heavy load. One more ache would break it. Just like a camel with a heavy back, yeah. One last straw, they say, broke the camel's back. Oh,
Well, aside from the iPad, the big PR winner this week, no, not the Roman Catholic Church. By the way, they've done everything but claim they own Who Dat in terms of bad PR. But the big winner this week was the Voyeur Club in West Hollywood, California, the club with purportedly themes of lesbian bondage in their stage show. You know that the Republican National Committee and its chairman, Mike Steele, got in trouble over a report showing the party spent nearly $2,000 for meals at that club. It turned out to be a gathering of about a dozen young eagles, major Republican donors under 45, who flocked to the Voyeur nightclub after an official function in near at the, I think, the Beverly Hilton. The donor program's director, Allison Myers, was fired in connection with the outing. The RNC is putting the brakes on the Young Eagles program temporarily. They're conducting an audit of the program's books, canceling upcoming events, including a gathering at the Philadelphia Phillies season opener, professional bull riding, a trip to the Ultimate Fighting Championship in Las Vegas, and a retreat at a firearms training center owned by the security contractor formerly known as Blackwater. The Eagles have landed. But they need a song to commemorate it.
Flying so high, stuff gets in your eye. Why wouldn't you take a stand? Everyone loves Young Eagles, so let the eagles land. A nest so extreme seemed like a dream, but it put a big dent in the brand. Just for the sake of the eagles, just let the eagles land. Young eagles, they fly on Friday. They stay up all weekend long. But when they fly over West Hollywood, their sense of direction goes wrong. Young pigeons and crow, who cares where they go? Their flights are completely unplanned. But you've got to guide the eagles, so let the eagles land. When you fly toward the stars, you may glide through some bars. Air traffic control's undermanned. Take pity on the eagles and let the eagles land. Oh, flying at night's never easy, even along Southland shores. When you deliver them from their bondage, don't stare at the eagle's soars. Ho, they'll soar again, heaven knows when, but they'll be the bird in the hand. Till then, just think of the eaglet and let the eagles land. Just let the eagles land.
the end here. Too clean, too cheap, too safe to meter. More tritium has been found on the grounds of the Vermont nuclear plant in Vermont. The Department of Health says another well, deeper than the other monitoring wells, is showing increased levels of tritium contamination. It's outside the area officials marked as being contaminated, so therefore in an area they thought was clear. The levels are low, but more tests will be conducted. Just last week, Entergy, owner of the plant, said it had found the source of the leak and had plugged it. Next month, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission will hold a closed-door meeting to discuss the leak with officials from Vermont, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. The April 14th meeting, well, now it's this month, will be held in Keene, New Hampshire. The choice of location has to do with Vermont's right-to-know law, which requires that any meeting involving the majority of any elected board has to be open to the public. Nuclear Regulatory Commission officials said they wanted to discuss the situation without the scrutiny of the press or the public. That's so reassuring. That's too cheap to meter. And the Department of Energy plans to ask the state of New Mexico to raise the limit it allows on the level of hazardous vapors leaking from waste drums at the federal government's nuclear waste repository near Carlsbad. But the exposures, according to the chief scientist, are insignificant. Take a deep breath, won't you? Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.45 megahertz. Oh, you find it. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet, two different locations on your computer, live and archived whenever you want it. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com, available on your smartphone. Through Stitcher.com, available as a free download to members at audible.com/theshow, and available as a podcast for free at kcrw.com. I bet it's available on the iPad, too. You think? It would just be like everything in the world being based on Push by Sapphire, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. One more apology. Hamid Karzai apologized for slagging the United States in a phone call with Secretary of State Clinton. Thanks, Hamid. We'll send the money. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.